Hekigan Roku case 62. Yunmen's within there is a jewel. The pointer. By means of the knowledge that has no teacher, he produces the marvelous function of non-doing. By means of unconditional compassion, he acts unasked as an excellent friend. In one phrase, there is killing. There is giving life. In one act, there is releasing, there is holding. Tell me, who has ever been like this? To test, I cite this case to see. The main case. Yunmen said to the community, within heaven and earth, through space and time, there is a jewel hidden inside the mountain of fall. Pick up a lamp and go into the Buddha hall. Take the triple gate and bring it on the lamp. The verse. Look, look on the ancient embankment. Who holds the fishing pole? Clouds roll in, the water vast and boundless. The white flowers in the moonlight. You must see for yourself. So today we close the fall Ango period after dedicating 3 months, 3 conducive months to the exploration of karma, the theme, examining what it is, how it functions in our lives, and most importantly, how can we change the course or trajectory of our lives by taking full responsibility for our actions today? And how can we lessen the perpetuation of harmful tendencies which we all have, harbor? When we understand the mechanism of karma and how our individual entanglements and general sense of discontentment leads to the great harm we create, collectively, there's no doubt that to change course and discover a more beneficial way to be is urgent, imperative, a must. But this kind of change, even when we are convinced that it is time to change, this kind of change is radical. It doesn't happen by chance. And it doesn't happen just by riding out challenging times in hope for a better or more peaceful future. This kind of change requires the willingness to put it all on the line and to know how to sustain a high level of determination and devotion to a spiritual path or a wisdom tradition over a long, long period of time. And it requires that we admit that the way we may have, that this way may reflect the way we have been, which means sleepwalking through life. We're living. Blood is flowing through the body. But are we alive? So we need to admit that this may be a possibility, and that we need to wake up. We need to break out from the confine of a small and fearful self and to realize how expansive, spacious, and all-inclusive we are already by nature. We can say to stop stooping down to what we have created. In the book we've been working with, Chogyam Trungpa says, as we tread the path, we move back toward the original open space, the space before ignorance and bewilderment arise, then you become a Buddha, or whatever you may call it, which is that you are awakened from the hangover, awakened from a dream. And in terms of awakening, it is quite fitting that the end of our fall Ango coincides with the Buddha's Enlightenment Day, which is commemorated, as you know, on December 8th. And this occasion, every year, is a wonderful reminder for each of us to put aside all our interpretations of the word enlightenment and go directly to the alive meaning of it, or the living reality of it, and do it in the most intimate and relevant way. Intimate means completely opening up, and relevant means it has to do with everything that's happening in my life today, and it has to include everything that's happening in the world today. It must include, because if it doesn't, how can it be called awakening? Right? It will be going from one dream to maybe a better dream. So we have to awaken. But while we all wake up to the same unified reality, we each wake up from a very different dream. Which means that the process of awakening and what we encounter along the path, it's very unique, and it manifests through our own unique circumstances. And for this process to be conducive, we need to embrace and use all the ingredients, as you've heard many times, all the ingredients in our lives. The physical state of this body, psychological, emotional entanglement, and, of course, the state of the world and our environment. Shakyamuni Buddha can be a great example for us. Although he lived in very different time and environment and experienced different circumstances, still he was an ordinary human being like each of us, subjected to the causes and conditions of the time he lived in, as we are subjected to the causes and conditions of the time we happen to be living in. And like us, he was also dealing with thoughts, emotions, regrets, discontentment. And was also, at times, preoccupied with mental constructs. You know, he did awaken from that, but it doesn't mean he didn't have to deal with it before. And it also doesn't mean that he did not encounter them after those entrapments, after. This is the way we would like to think about awakening. So he experienced all kinds of challenges, yet through a long and determined process, which he was able to sustain, committed to sustain, he was able to go beyond mental constructs and personal interpretations, and he was awakened to the wondrous preciousness that is essentially who we are. And then he devoted the rest of his life to being a mirror to others. Through all his talks and through the way he lived his life, he tried to convey that he realized. And what he realized, as he said many times, is within the capacity of every human being. But because we are so convinced, attached to an unchanging self, of course we remain trapped within the husk and blind to the jewel that we are in essence. So in commemorating the Buddha's enlightenment, we are reminded of their responsibility to turn the attention to our own lives. So we can recognize the many ways we uphold the idea of an unchanging self or unchanging reality, and then reinfuse our determination to practice wholeheartedly, all in, all the time. All in, all the time. But what does it mean to practice wholeheartedly? So there is that statement or the advice to practice wholeheartedly, or the title, a practice or a path. And then there is me and my life and my preferences, my likes and dislikes, my hang-ups, all the barriers that I face. And often what happens is that we end up creating a practice that fits that rather than goes along with a path. So we create, sometimes we're aware of it and sometimes we're not, but we often end up creating a practice that fit something or the idea of unchanging person, while we claim that we want to awaken to a reality of constant change. That doesn't work. There is continuous clash. So all in, all the time is something we need to personally investigate. What does it mean? And be honest with ourselves. Am I doing that? It doesn't mean keep a card and we're going to, every time you come in, we'll punch it and then you prove at the end of the month, I was here so many times. Give me my, what I earned, whatever that is. It has nothing to do with accumulation. It has much more to do with how open I'm willing to be and how honest I'm willing to be. And also to know where I need to apply effort. Effort is a general word. It requires effort, a great deal of it. But it's not the same kind of effort for each of us. Sometimes people say, I have no problem sitting for hours on end. Well, then that's not something you need to focus on. You're good on that department. Great. What is it that you do have a problem with? That's the question. What bugs you? Is it the practice? Is it different things that we do or don't do? Right? Because if we don't do that, we put in the time. But that alone will not do. In other words, we have to go to where it hurts. We have to go to where it is uncomfortable. If we want to learn anything from the Buddha's enlightenment or the Buddha's process or life, that's what it means. Because nothing happens vicariously. And as a Sangha, we can encourage and support exactly that, right? So each of us goes to where we need to go, to where it hurts. And as a Sangha, we're here to give very important nutrients that sustain this kind of exploration. And sometimes just by showing up, feeling bogged down, feeling discouraged. Sometimes that alone can be encouraging for all of us. Because we realize, yes, we go through those periods too, all of us. But we keep going. Also, it may be important to note here that enlightenment has nothing to do with time or a particular kind of process. It's always accessible, always within our natural capacity. So that's not an issue for debate. If that was not the truth, then the entire teaching collapses. Because it begins with that not being a question, or with you not being in question. So the issue, the reason why it takes time, it has more to do with how rigid and dense we have become. And so it takes time to soften, to open up, and to become more spacious. It's kind of like rain pouring down on parched land. It takes time for the soil to soften before it begins to open up and absorb the water. The first time it rains, the rain just washes off. Most of it is not absorbed. So it takes time, more and more rain. Over time, it softens. And then the pores of the soil, earth, open up. So it's the same with us. It takes time for the Dharma rain to penetrate the density of our rigid self. Not just that, the rigid self we have come to cherish and trust. And only you can do that. Only you have what it takes to sustain this kind of continuous practice, regardless of what's going on in your mind, regardless of the circumstances that you may be facing today. In the commentary on the Buddha's enlightenment experience, Keizan said, "So studying from all angles, penetrating in all ways, you should clarify Buddha's enlightenment and your own enlightenment." He said, I want you all to see this story closely, the story of the Buddha, and be able to explain it, letting the explanation flow from your own heart, not borrowing from the words of another. To explain, to be, to become the explanation of the Buddha's enlightenment. Not to verbalize it. One of the common issues with enlightenment, what we have made of it, is that we make it to be a future goal or desirable prize we wish to acquire. And viewing it in such a way creates two issues. First, it solidifies the assumption that currently it is not within my reach. Currently, I'm trapped. I'm held back. And therefore, it is not within my capacity today. And the second, it solidifies delusion as a fixed opposite to realization. Then I'm the one who occupies this versus that. So that may be how we think, but in reality, neither delusion nor enlightenment are fixed. It's just that when we look at words like that or at reality from perspective of something that or someone that unchanging or does not flow, we tend to assign naturally fixed notions to what we see, what we hear. And the way we view ourselves, this is where it begins, or the rigidity begins there. The way we view ourselves permeates the way we view reality, other people, and possibilities. Maybe more importantly, the way we view open possibilities, whether or not it is accessible for me. When we are identified with the karmic situation we find ourselves in, we are creating a closed reality that has no new possibilities. And of course, we feel very stuck. As long as I believe that my past experiences are dictating the way I am today, then I keep affirming that there is no option to experience a new way of being at this moment. And not in the foreseeable future either. It is not the nature of reality, but it becomes the reality I experience and trust. And that trust is what we need to mess with. So Chogyam Trungpa said, you could be born a completely miserable, confused, ignorant person, but no one prevents you from attaining enlightenment. You're not necessarily born with the tendency to remain ignorant and confused. It depends on how much you are overwhelmed by the past and by the present. If you're captivated by the past, then you cannot make a move. Captivated by the past. This is something we need to dive into. We are enamored. I would even say in love with our past. Even if that past was horrific. It's a very strange kind of being in love, but there is a love story with what happened. So if you're captivated by the past, then you cannot make a move. But if you have the faintest, slightest feeling that your existence could be changed, if you have any kind of progressive, rebellious, or revolutionary approach, and it is exactly that, to be a practitioner. It means to rebel against ourselves. So any kind of progressive, rebellious, or revolutionary approach, whatever you want to call it, then that breeds further freedom. In other words, the potential of the embryonic enlightened mind in us can't be undermined by the heavy karma of the past all the time. Sooner or later, he says, it's going to break through. So we are not entrapped in karma. There is free choice from that point of view. So feeling stuck. Yeah, there is the feeling stuck of being stuck. But there's a very important question there. Is that feeling affirming being stuck? Or what? Maybe we should look for the link there between the feeling of stuck or being stuck and actually being stuck. Sometimes those may be together, as if I feel stuck, therefore I am stuck. But we have to examine that. Yeah, I feel stuck. I'm not going to suppress that. Does that mean I'm stuck? That's something we need to look at. Because often it is an automatic continuation from the feeling to the reality. And when feelings affirm our reality, it's a very flimsy, unhealthy reality that we end up living in. Well, not just that, it's a very harmful way of being. It's not that there are no feelings, and it's not that we should ignore. But how can that affirm reality? How many realities are there? So what he's saying is, if there is the tiniest, faintest glimmer, that should be what's affirming or begin to affirm your reality. That's what needs to be nurtured. And again, this is why there is a Sangha. This is why there is a practice. To meet that spark. To meet that spark. And make it grow. like a bunch of tiny candles come together, right? Because we each have that spark. So it means instead of copying and pasting the same old self from one day to the next, there is a possibility to die every night and to be reborn every morning. What does that look like? What does that mean? How do you feel about that? How do you feel about going to bed, whatever happened that day, that year, last 10 years? Making a conscious decision to die to all of it. Tonight I'm going to die to everything that happened up to this moment. And tomorrow morning, if I wake up, I'll wake up brand new. Sounds like a radical idea, but there's nothing special about this way of being, since it is our natural expression, our natural way of being. But we are so vested in the idea of something else. Solid, karma-based self. So it may seem imaginary or maybe out of reach. And as Keizan said, only you can study this predicament from all angles, and only you can awaken from it through your own efforts. Only you can become aware of how a fixed self is constructed, and only you can gradually become divested. It's a good word to work with, divested from this process. Don't divest and then reinvest in something else. Divest, period. No need to invest in anything. So about that process of creating or layering a self, Chogyam Trungpa said, until we come to the true Dharma fully, we can't shake off the ego. Egoism is not regarded as theory, but as our ongoing practice. It is the root of samsara, and to overcome it, we have to develop some antidote. Egoism begins with one thing, the thought that we actually exist. That we actually are here. We may have our doubts about ourselves, but we don't have any doubts about the notion of being, existing. But by perpetually overlapping one level of consciousness with the next, we try to make ourselves solid, but the result is just patchwork. It may seem as if there is one big sheet called myself, my own existence. But we are not one big sheet. However, since we have not actually realized that, we constantly try to overlap ourselves. From a distance, we may appear to be a big sheet, one solid block. But if you look closely, you can see that we are made of fragments which survive only momentarily. That momentary survival itself is not really solid, for if you look closely at each particular fraction of it, you see that each fraction is also very patchy. And this is, I think, very clear description of how we not just create but sustain going forward. So we have created ourselves and we keep sustaining it. It has to be sustained going forward or it will collapse. It's a lot of work. Because right now, today, I can step away from that creation and then realize that there's nothing there. In other words, as long as I'm not, or until I stop creating it, I think there's something there. But as long as I am not involved in the process of making myself, I do not exist. So how do I make myself? we take bits and pieces, as he says, and we put them together and we create someone. And we have to defend that someone. But when you stop defending that someone and you just observe it, right away you realize that there is no one there, which is very scary. So we run back to creating again. So it's not that we don't realize it. I think a lot of people do. I just think it's so scary that we... That's why meditation practice is not is not very popular. Or at least not for long. Because you're just sitting with yourself, by yourself, with that, looking at that, realizing the production is self created, and then little by little you fade, you move away from that, it fades away, and you move away from that into something that is just expensive but non-existent in the way we see existence. So he says, even if you look closely, which we need to be doing, you realize, you see that it is very patchy, kind of pixelates and breaks apart. And so we need to bring this truth from darkness to light. We need to bring this truth from darkness to light. And we often want to keep it in the dark because of how terrifying it may be. So in our tradition, we view Shakyamuni Buddha as an example for maintaining the resolve and for living an awakened life. And we refer to him as our original teacher. But how do we understand the phrase original teacher? You may adjust position. So the word teacher can be somewhat problematic if we begin practicing with the basic teaching of you are already there, right? So a teacher in this case is very different than any other teacher we have had, right? Because a teacher in this case is not just the person saying, do this, do not do that. There's something else. The teacher may say that, but at the same time may mirror something much deeper than that. The point of this koan, it says, by means of the knowledge that has no teacher. By means, and this is Yunmen, referring to Yunmen. By means of the knowledge that has no teacher, he produces the marvelous function of non-doing. So the means, he uses the means of the knowledge that has no teacher. He has access to that and is using it to teach. He produces the marvelous function of non-doing by means of unconditional compassion. He acts unasked as an excellent friend. By means of unconditional compassion. And it is exactly that, right? It's by means of. This is where the power comes from. The ability, his ability, or any teacher's ability, to do that requires unconditional compassion. Which means knowing how we get stuck and knowing how we can get unstuck. So it's referring to Yunmen, but it is equally fitting to the Buddha, to Shakyamuni Buddha, and all Dharma teachers throughout the 2,500 years of our tradition. And all the teacher, all those teachers, all they did is simply mirrored by tapping, employing, and expressing the timeless original teacher within themselves. It's the same teacher within each person. So on that level, there is a level of equality. It's not the teacher and everybody else. Because what the teacher taps is in everyone. Not less. Commenting on the meaning of teacherless or inherent knowledge, Hakuin said, "An infant knows how to suck the breast. This is teacherless knowledge. Also, great knowledge is teacherless knowledge, spontaneously experienced after having cut through the field of storage consciousness." Alaya Vijnana. The Lotus Sutra mentions all knowledge, Buddha knowledge, natural knowledge, and teacherless knowledge. In the commentary, it says, "All knowledge is the knowledge derived from contemplation of emptiness. Buddha knowledge is the knowledge derived from contemplation of existing things. It is unique to Buddhas. When these two kinds of knowledge are developed by spontaneous awareness, they are called natural knowledge, insofar as they do not depend on other conditions. They are called teacherless knowledge. Sometimes the essence of knowledge is called natural knowledge, while the features of knowledge are referred to as teacherless or untaught knowledge." How do we teach each other to be ourselves? How do we give permission to each other to be ourselves? It's probably a better question. We know how to be ourselves. We're just so terrified of being judged that we capitulate, that we become someone else. And then we have to justify that constantly. It's like the saying, you live in your own home, but you're paying rent to someone else. So our entire tradition is based on an intrinsic nature that is inherently there in each of us and cannot be given, cannot be acquired, cannot be lost. It can only be realized and actualized. And unless it's realized and actualized, it is there, but it does not function freely in our lives. In the commentary, it says, "Some people acknowledge this radiant, shining spirituality as the jewel, but they cannot make use of it, and they do not realize its wonderness. Therefore, they cannot set it in motion and cannot bring it out in action." And it's true. You know, even for those who may not be sitting much, I think we know. Everybody knows a little bit about it. But we just don't know how to set it in motion, as it says. How to bring it out in action. But we don't have to know that. All we need to do is stop acting as if we're not that. It's not how do I act enlightened. How can I be myself? It's more about stop acting as if I'm not, or as if I'm someone else. Am I aware of that? Am I aware of my own acting as someone else? And Bendoa Dogen says, although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant in each person, it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization. When you release it, it fills your hand. How could it be limited to one or many? When you speak it, it fills your mouth. It is not bounded by length or width. All Buddhas continuously abide in this Dharma and do not leave traces of consciousness about where they are. Sentient beings continuously move about this Dharma, but where they are is not clear in their consciousness. The concentrated endeavor of the way I'm speaking of allows all things to come forth in realization, to practice, going beyond in the path of letting go, passing through the barrier of dualism and dropping off limitations in this way. How could you be hindered by nodes in bamboo or knots in wood, right? How could you be hindered by your thoughts, ideas, conceptual self, past experiences, even trauma? We can't just read about it and assume that that's the way it's going to keep working. I read about it in a book and therefore I am stuck. I think sometimes reading too much about it makes us believe that there is no other way. And there are a lot of books out there that may not say that, but may give the impression that we are very, very, very stuck because of what happened in the past. A lot of it has to do also with where's my awareness, right? If my awareness is on that, then that becomes the predominant energy in my life. If I constantly think about how stuck I am very stuck. And not only that, but I'm also disconnected, detached from everything around me. This is why we often talk about awareness as the soul that cuts through, as the soul that gives life. And it's not complicated. Yesterday I was driving up after class, up the road, and got to an intersection. This guy was about to cross the road, and I looked at him. We made eye contact. So I figured, well, you know, he sees me, so I'm going to go. He stopped. As soon as I started going, he started going too. I stopped. He's alive. But it was really interesting because his eye, he did make eye contact, but his attention was not there. You know, sometimes you look at somebody, you talk to them, they look at you, but nothing is going through. It's really that often. I think it's just not being able to be in charge of our attention and awareness. Something is taking it. Something is grabbing the attention. So the eyes cannot do anything unless there is some attention behind it. Looking at something doesn't do anything if my awareness is elsewhere. Same with all our senses. Same with sitting practice, right? You could be sitting, but wasting your time, right? Because you could be sitting and practicing how to stay, but at the same time, you could be practicing how not to stay. Right? So we have to be aware of where the attention is at any second. Where's my attention? Where's my attention? Where's my attention? Constantly. Never mind what I think. Never mind what I feel. Where's my attention? And it is absolutely a lifelong commitment. There are many people that come and go over the years. We've seen any practice center constantly sees people, tourists come and go. Check it out. Try it out. Get to a point of being triggered by something, but not taking responsibility, pointing a finger, moving on to something else. Wrapping it up nicely, creating a good explanation, moving on. I think that if a practice doesn't make you pissed off, it's not going to work. If practice makes you feel good all the time, it's not the right practice for you. Right? So knowing how to listen to that spark within, knowing how to connect with that, right, that inner spark, and knowing how to follow that, knowing how to not disregard it, it's crucial. Because I think the difference between those who stick around and those who disappear has mostly to do with the strength of that inner spark to begin with, and knowing how to sustain and grow it over time. And in this koan, Yunmen is doing exactly that. He's reminding his followers and us of this precious, inherent spark, jewel, being. Within, he said to the community, within heaven and earth, through space and time, there is a jewel hidden inside a mountain of form. Pick up a lamp and go directly to the Buddha hall. Take the triple gate and bring it on the lamp. The first line of what Yunmen said is quoted from an essay titled Jewel Treasury, written by Seng Chao, Chinese Buddhist monk and scholar during the 4th century. I finished writing this essay under very unusual circumstances. Some of you may remember the story. At some point of his life, Seng Chao was asked by the king to become an official in his palace, but he refused to do so and was sentenced to execution for his refusal. Because saying no to the king was not an option. So Seng Chao accepted the verdict, but ask for an extension of 1 week so he could finish writing his essay. His last verse, when he was about to have his head cut off, has become quite famous in the Zen tradition. It says, "The four elements in the origin are non-existent. The five aggregates are essentially empty." Right? The four elements, earth, water, earth, fire, and the five aggregates, form, sensation, reaction, consciousness. When the head faces the sharp blade, it is nothing more than cutting the spring wind. Now, obviously, this is very deep realization of non-existence or not existing. In one of his essays, Seng Chao wrote, a thing called up by us by name may not appear as what is expected to appear. A name calling up a thing may not lead to the real thing. Therefore, the sphere of absolute truth is beyond the noise of verbal teaching. How can it be made a subject of discussion without paradox and contradiction? Right? So a teacherless or teaching that cannot be taught does not only use words. Sometimes we use words, but does not get entangled in words because it is beyond words. And what he's saying is that we can use words as long as we understand that we're not talking about words. Then we're free to use words. Otherwise, as he says, we get caught up in paradox and contradictions. So that was the origin of this line. So Yunmen cited this, what he taught everybody. And the main idea is, how can you take this priceless jewel and conceal it in the heaps and elements? Right? How can you take something so precious and conceal it in the heaps and elements? In other words, how can formlessness be found in form? How can timelessness manifest within our time-bound bodies? That's what he's talking about. And the commentary adds to that, that the words spoken in this essay are all in accord with the talk of our school. Have you not seen how Qingqing asked Cao Shan, how is it when the principle of pure emptiness ultimately, there is no body? Cao Shan said, the principle being like this, what about phenomena? Qing said, as is principle, so are phenomena. Right? Nothing and something are not two. So when we say within, we use the word within, but the without already reflects that, or the within shines through the without. Imagine that, realizing that, that this preciousness is revealing itself in each of us. If we do realize it, how would we be with each other? That is why it is said, within heaven and earth, in space and time, there is a jewel hidden in the mountain of form. And the great meaning of this is to show that everyone is fully endowed. Each individual is perfectly complete. Yunmen thus brought it up to show his community. It is total obvious. He couldn't go on and add interpretations for you like a lecturer. But he is compassionate and adds a footnote for you by saying, pick up the lamp and go into the Buddha hall. Bring the triple gate on the lamp. And to pick up the lamp and go directly to the Buddha hall means again, to take full responsibility for your own practice, for your own realization, for your own Buddhahood. Go directly. Where is it? We may ask. Where am I? Go directly to you. You can adjust. And so to bring the triple gate and put it on top of the lamp may need some explanation. Traditional monasteries would typically have three gates, one very large and two small gates. So logically speaking, this advice seems impossible to follow. And what Yunmen is saying, do not allow what you think is big to remain stuck as big in your mind. Do not allow what you think is stopping you to become a barrier. Do not allow logic to stop you. Because we convince ourselves that we can't. Not today. Not with everything that happened yesterday. Or not with what's happening today. The commentary says that Yunmen has broken up emotional discrimination, intellectual ideas, gain, loss, affirmation, and negation, all at once for you. He has broken up all of it, all at once, for you. From the depth of unconditional compassion. But despite of how restless or stuck we may feel, and in the midst of the mad reality we have created as human beings, it is still possible to get in touch with this inner spark, expose the jewel within the form. And there may be conflicting voices within us, but through the simple practice of Zazen, we can actually learn to follow the voice of wisdom. So I'm going to end with this paragraph from Chogyam, which speaks about that. It's the simplicity of practice. Peace in terms of practice does not mean bliss or euphoric state. It means that at last there is some rest. Simply by looking at the fickleness of thoughts and of your own mind, the jumpiness of your whole being, that shaky quality is somewhat grounded. That shaky quality is somewhat grounded in what? And he says, that is a relief. You say to yourself, everything is going to be okay. There's no need to jump around. Sit down and look at your mind. Look at yourself. Just do it. Then the other part of you says, I don't want to do it. It makes me so embarrassed and uncomfortable. And the first one comes along and says, nevertheless, everything is okay. We know that, don't we? So let's do it. Just do it. And what he's talking about is the voice of the spark, the voice of the jewel within, which for so many years we have been accustomed to turning away from. So now we can do something else. Today we can do something different. We can learn to listen. And also befriend the other voice that says, I don't want to do it. I don't want to sit here. I feel uncomfortable. I feel jittery. And then the other grounded voice says, I know, that's okay. We're going to sit here together. It's possible. But only you can do it. Only you can do it. Thank you.